Story 5 of The Furthest Reaches
of Space.
Ed Reed Short Sci-Fi, Volume 8. X Marks the Asteroid by Ross Racklin, Part 2. He did not answer. His flight was precipitous. It was not for several minutes that he realized the loss of his glasses had not impeded his vision. He leaned weakly against a bulkhead. Very early in life, his parents had insisted that the inherited weak eyes of the Unterzeiters be made normal with ocular aids. Indeed, powerful dark eyeglasses had grown over the generations to be a symbol of Unterzeiter autocracy. His parents had been wrong. Perhaps they had been wrong in other things. He shuddered. Without his eyeglasses, he hardly felt himself to be an Unterzeiter. Slowly, memory of his original purpose in ordering Captain Froshag to throw a dance came back. In the ballroom, Beecher would be strutting to win the favor of somebody's wife. With a bit more success, Fayette would have a dozen young husbands circling her, moth-like. Intrigue, thought Unterzeiter, and subtlety is ever the adventurer's most potent weapon. The great general indirectly entices the foe away from his own most strongly held point. Several minutes later, he was fitting his passkey into the door of the Beecher's stateroom. He closed the door, switched on the radio lights. The efficiently furnished little rooms were brightly illumined. The map? Where? Start at the beginning. At first glance, Tertium Organum was not in the bookcase. Then he reached in back of the row of lurid fiction titles and knew he had guessed correctly. A little too correctly. He felt one of the few cold chills of his life travelling on his spine. He opened the book and the map fell out. He sat down weakly. His fingers trembled as he smoothed out the heavy rag parchment. A map of the solar system. He dizzied. X marks the asteroid. Just as he remembered seeing it that long ago day when his great father showed it to him. His father, that stern-faced giant in whom the valiant blood of the hibernating Unterzeiters flowed, had been most explicit. One of these years, the map would be given to Ralph. He would guard it with his blood. In the course of time, Ralph would give it to his son. At long last, the hibernaculum would be opened. The dozen hibernating Unterzeiters would be brought to life with injections of anti-somnoline and would once more take over their rightful place of dominance in the solar system. The position they had been scourged from by a relentless political regime which had smashed the Unterzeiters' fabulous tri-planet cartels, leaving the remnants in the form of 1,000 rigidly controlled small holding companies. The position they had been forced to flee from, leaving only their children and a hidden map. Unterzeiter's fingers still shook. Sweat dribbled down his blonde hairline. Something was wrong. Everything was wrong. The map itself was hideously out of scale. The traced orbits of the planets were circular, not elliptical. And the map itself. I should not have found it so easily. Counter-intrigue? No time to lose. From his inside pocket, he took the flat little duplicate camera, adjusted the frame over the map. He flipped the shutter. Seconds later, the map was back exactly where he had taken it from. There was only one sound in this quiet room. The tremor of the gas thrust shoving the ship through dark void into the spaces beyond Jupiter. Suddenly, there was the scuffle of moving feet. Unterzeiter found himself in the position of a traveller in an alien city, where savage little children had switched all the street signs. Nonetheless, he lunged for the door, threw off the lights in the stateroom, opened the door, closed it, stood with his back pressed against it. Hurrying footsteps, Unterzeiter was after the sound. The big, hurrying frame of Captain Froshag. Unterzeiter grabbed his arm, whipped him around. Froshag's hairy, dignified face was wrenched with astonishment.
Mr. Straley!
He said uncertainly. His brow clouded. He looked at Unterzeiter's grip on his heavy arm and frowned with displeasure. He shook off his hand.
I'm not used to being manhandled, sir. You're perhaps imbibed too much at the party.
He was being sternly insulting. Unterzeiter crumbled. He could not be wrong.
I haven't been well. My heart.
He touched at his chest apologetically. It wasn't too far from the truth. Pains in his chest. His mother had always assured him the Unterzeiters were prone to heart trouble, just as she got around to making him wear glasses. Terrible uncertainties were crowding him. He was surrounded by treachery. Had Froshag been shadowing him? Froshag's great frame rocked judiciously on its toes.
If you truly have a bad heart,
he said measuredly.
"You have taken the long trail when the Ares hit heaven. We humans often are plagued with strange influences. Words spoken to the unguarded mind of the child sometimes become fact to the grown-up. I am not worried about the heart. Now's the reason I'm away from the turret. I've been looking for you."
He cleared his throat.
"There's a king-sized ship of the silver type on our tail, Mr. Straley. I'm not the worrying kind, however. Worry is indeed the prime cause of most kidney troubles, and besides, but clouds the mind when there's work to be done. Therefore not until I observed that the pursuing craft was indeed pursuing—"
"Come to the point." Everything else was swept away. Undersider was suddenly furious at this big, stupid, philosophizing blunderer.
"You're trying to excuse yourself for not telling me right away. Let's get to the turret."
Undersider went at full stride, his brain in high gear. They were being pursued. That arrogant Bigger Bales, no doubt. So what? Add one more menace to those he was collecting? In fact, mess up the mess a little more.
"Captain Forshag," he said, "you are at a well-read man. Ever read Ouspensky?"
Forshag nodded his square, bearded chin.
"A man of vast creative mental power, Mr. Straley. A man who seemed able to step off our three dimensions and look at our universe from a new viewpoint."
"Tentatively."
"You have an interest in the classical philosophers, perhaps?"
Undersider muttered something garbled. He trotted ahead of Forshag up the ramp to the glassed-in control turret, went past several instrument men to the viewing disc assembly. Forshag hurriedly got the pursuing ship on the crosshairs. It was a great globoid catching golden-green sun on one half, black interstellar shadow on the other.
"Raise it on the beam," Unterzoider ordered.
Moments later, Ralph Unterzoider was looking at the detested face of Bigger Bales.
"That's me," smiled Bigger, his rosy face creasing. "Bigger Bales. And how are you, Mr. Ralph Unterzoider?"
His smile became even more rosy. Unterzoider gulped. He was completely dismayed. Captain Forshag showed no reaction at the unmasking. Captain Forshag kept his face turned studiously away. Unterzoider felt himself going into a spin, but he drew himself up and said haughtily,
"Kindly keep your inside information to yourself, Mr. Bigger Bales. I travel under the name of Carruthers Straley, merely because there is an unsavoury flavour to the name of Unterzoider. Now, why are you following us?"
"Following you?" Bigger Bales appeared injured. "I'm trying to catch up with you. I intend to come aboard."
"You will not."
Undersider yelled the words so loud, the crew members in back of him half jumped from their charts. Bigger's image wavered on the screen as he leaned forward and settled back.
"I didn't expect such a reaction, Mr. Straley,"
he said, his little eyes almost hidden by fat or penetrating.
"I almost think you were hiding something. Are you?"
Forshag raised a commanding hand.
"That'll be enough of that,"
he commanded.
"We are a law-abiding ship. I myself am an honest man. Secrecy gives rise to certain nervous disorders, which I avoid. If you wish to come aboard, perhaps you are taking advantage of some space article."
"Taking advantage, if you want to put it that way. Two of my men are down sick. The usual spastic seizures. We've run out of ATG. We're coming aboard your ship to get some. Article 10B of the Space Constitution gives us that right."
Unterzoider brushed Forshag aside.
"I warn you, Mr. Bales," he said thickly. "If you have an ulterior motive, such as the looting of this ship, we will put up a fight. Our settlers were chosen for their intrepid qualities. We have guns, we have bombs, we have a flare cannon. You will not find us easy prey."
Bales leaned back easily.
"Relax, Undersider. As far as guns go, we've got our share. And we've got a brace of flare cannons embrasured on the bulkheads of the Space Queen ourselves, if you want to get tough."
He spread his fat hands.
"But who wants to get tough? See you, gentlemen, aboard your ship 24 hours from now."
With which remark he broke contact. Undersider was at Forshag instantly.
"Not a word about my identity," he breathed. "After all, I did pay you 1,000 credits. And for which I thanked you, Mr. Unterzoider. I'm not a secretive man. If asked a direct question, I seldom impair my health by lying. Now permit me to return to my duties."
Fuming, Unterzoider left the control turret, went straight to the ballroom. Here, without any hesitation whatever, he cut in on Fayette, taking her away from the handsomest husband in the lot. No word of apology. He held her very close, very tight. He danced with a mathematical precision. Even the soul of the dance, he reflected grimly, derives from a mathematical formula. The dummy four-piece band haggard out its hag-strut very effectively. He was rewarded as Fayette lost her surprised stiffness and began to melt into him in perfect rhythm to the tune. Her blonde head gradually nestled into his shoulder, her eyes closed, a small, sweet smile on her lips. At the first opportunity, he swung her without a break to a small observation lounge, and in the cold green glow of a million stars drew her to him, letting himself be stunned by the warmth of her and the drugging quality of her perfume. He kissed her. She was carried away into a land of intricate enchantment, where love is all, and the girl in my arms is you. She opened her eyes, looking at him dreamily.
I love you, she murmured.
I know, said Untersoida.
I don't know what your intentions are. I don't care what kind of a sneaky, underhanded person you are. I still love you.
He kissed her again. She was crying. Undersoida took out his handkerchief and wiped away her tears.
Now don't worry, Fayette, he soothed. Everything will turn out all right.
He took her back to the dance floor. By luck, he found the young husband she'd been dancing with. He gave her back.
Sorry,
he said. He gave Fayette a fleeting smile and hurriedly took off. He went to his cabin and feverishly got to work. Plug up the loopholes as you go along, a favourite axiom of the Untersoiders. Now that Fayette was in love with him, he could draw on her for any emergency. Apparently the time was coming when he would need an ally. He ran the negative through the hypo, put it in the dryer and paced the floor. He rubbed at his lips with the back of his hand. He could still smell Fayette's perfume. He could still feel her bare, warm back. Careful, careful. He went to a mirror and looked at his face. Weak, the glassless eyes, red-rimmed, thin nose and lips. His spirits dropped. How could Fayette be in love with him, particularly when he was one of the outlawed Untersoiders? The finished photograph went into the automatic pantograph. He blew it up 6 times into a square of Mirac paper. He smoothed the new map onto the desk. Instantly, he saw why at first the map had appeared so impossibly distorted. The circles did not indicate the orbits of the planets. They were merely a logarithmic indication of the scale of the map. Mercury, being 43 million miles from the sun, was the basic unit, and that was necessary. The solar system could not be drawn to scale unless the inner planets crowded in fractionally close to the sun. Here the positions of the planets were indicated by dots, whose map distance from the sun receded inward in logarithmic ratio to actual distance. Pluto, for instance, being 100 times farther from the sun than Mercury in real distance, appeared by the map to be only roughly 20 times as far. The position of the dot planets on the map, of course, indicated the exact date of the day when the map was drawn. The finely drawn X showed the position of the Hibernaculum asteroid on that day. Since then, roughly 82 years ago, X had moved in its orbit. Where to? That was the problem. Undersoida sweated. It was said by the Untersoiders, with possible justification, that only an Untersoider could think like an Untersoider. How often his father had told him that, but he was confused. Naturally, the map was meant to confuse. What were the figures at the bottom of the map? S1.7452, C1.2020, and 032118. And why at the top corner was the name Untersoida printed with a small u? Nobody but an Untersoida would know. Well, he didn't know. Puzzled, he paced the room. Tomorrow, Bigger Bales would force his way aboard ship. Little could be done to stop him, partly because he insisted he needed ATG, a chemical staff of life necessary for muscular action, but mostly because he had superior firepower. Actually, he wanted the map. If he didn't get it, he would inevitably loot the ship. He paused before the mirror again. Glassless, he didn't feel like an Untersoida. Looking upon himself, naked of face, he cringed. If only the whole thing were over. If only he were in the observatory under the greenly burning stars with... Frantically, he stopped that line of thought. He hauled out a sheaf of maps. He had come prepared. He had brought the duplicate camera, the film developing equipment, the pantograph, other odds and ends. He had a shelf full of celestial mechanic manuals, as well as books on the more ordinary arithmetics. But he had only 1 year of math. Somewhere along the line he had outguessed his patriarch of a father and his matriarch of a mother. Law had been the result. Well suited, he had felt at the time, to the trickery, the deceit, and the orneriness of the typical Untersoida mind. Anyway, he needed a slide rule before he could tackle the equations. For the present he would work out the date the map was made. Then it would be possible to discover X's present position. All that was necessary was, mathematically, to rotate the present time position of the planets backward in time, clockwise, that is, until they coincided with map position. Star maps, the Ephemeris, and the planet catalogue should make that fairly simple. After an hour, his nerves began to quiver. He ran his hands distractedly through his awry blonde hair. He had the answer, and it was impossible, except that it was correct. Apparently, the map had been drawn up in prehistoric times, 50,000 years ago. After a virtually sleepless sleep period, he went to break. The settlers were in a happy, chattering mood. Titan was only 10 days away. Untazoida ate with the pressure of the Beecher's eyes on him. Nathaniel Beecher showed quiet menace on a face that ordinarily held grinning, shifty-eyed camaraderie. Fayette had sullen, angry shadows under her eyes. Perhaps she was smarting under a humiliation that might make her do dangerous things. He'd left her rather abruptly at the dance. Untazoida bit his lip. Perhaps he had not covered that situation as well as he might. Remorse was an emotion new to Untazoida, but then he had suffered some kind of mental upset when his glasses shattered under Fayette's heel. He could see as well as the next man, and consequently was beginning to have some shattering doubts about the wisdom of his immediate ancestors. And he was a man. He gulped. All these were dangerous thoughts. He must continue to think like an Untazoida. Something devious, something tricky. Something that would competently accomplish the task of fooling the Beechers, Bigger Bales, and possibly Foshag. As he started out of the dining room, Beecher lunged after him, trailing a rocket stream of cigar smoke.
"A minute, Straley."
Beecher held him from the door, his close-set eyes full of dislike.
"Foshag told me Bigger Bales is back there."
He jerked a shoulder.
"You're a man with many small tricks, Straley," he went on slowly. "Probably you're the most dangerous man I've ever encountered. I've been around."
"I'll bet you have."
Beecher gestured with a cigar, turned on his grin, apparently to convince anybody watching that this was a friendly conversation.
"But I'm not letting you get away with anything. We have to do something about Bales. I don't intend to be hijacked. Truthfully, mister, I don't see why the settlers shouldn't be forewarned. They're a decent bunch. We're not. In fact," his eyes were boring, "I've known from the first that you've been using these people."
"As you have, and as you've attempted to use me."
"Yes," Beecher's lips moved hesitantly. "You and I are fired. We're all three getting a free ride to Titan, aren't we? No expenses. So now that we're almost laid our cards on the table, why shouldn't we join forces?"
Untazoida drew himself up disdainfully. "I work alone, Beecher."
"Yeah," Beecher showed disgust. "You mean you're working for something no decent person could help you with?"
"And you mean by that?"
Beecher's eyes simmered. He said nothing. Untazoida snapped.
"I still work alone, unless forced to recruit help. That condition may occur. In the meantime, use some of those qualities your leadership and explorer should have. Inform these people what's up. Tell them Bales will probably attempt to loot the ship. Line the men up at the arsenal and load them down with weapons. Make arrangements so that women and children will keep to the cabins. Can you handle that?"
Beecher flushed until his face was bright red. Leaving him properly insulted, Untazoida went to the control turret where he cornered Foshag, drew him to the solar chart. Untazoida picked up a pencil, made an indentation at random. It was considerably to the east of the Ares' present position.
"Change course immediately, to that point."
Foshag huffed rebelliously.
"That won't help us outrun Bales. The new course will but give him a hypotenuse to travel. He'll run us down quicker."
Untazoida's lips turned thinner. Muttering, Foshag sat down to the computations. On the way out of the turret, Untazoida slipped a slide rule out of an instrument case so deftly that nobody noticed. Another hour's work showed him that the two sets of figures, respectively, indicated X's point of origin and direction of travel. C stood for cosine, of course, S for sine. X had been, when the map was made, some degrees below the plane of the ecliptic. Its orbit was at a steep slant to that plane. So what? So the point of origin was located in time 50,000 years ago. The map was a fake. He sat at the desk a long time, thinking and thinking fast. Foshag must have known who he was from the first. He was an observing man, but he was also a closed-mouthed man, who answered only to direct questions. And the Beechers knew his identity, too. Fayette had accidentally called him by his real name. Treachery. Undoubtedly, Bigger Bales had tipped off the Beechers just before Untazoida arrived at the Beechers' apartment in Marsport. Bigger Bales thought Untazoida knew where the map was, but didn't know the Beechers had it. bigger intended to let the situation stir itself up so the asteroid's location would more easily come out of hiding. Yes, everything was wrong. Bigger would loot the ship when he learned the map was a practical joke. Taking a ship this far beyond Jupiter would have to pay off, and there was nobody to stop him. What was it his father told him about undesirable techniques? Sell short at the top, buy long at the bottom. All events, good or bad, could be used to build a firmer superstructure. Well, face it, ship's course had been changed. The settlers by this time had demanded to know why. B2 would tell them Carruthers Australia was Ralph Unterzoider, hunting for Hibernaculum. The settlers by this time were up in arms against him. He paled. He leaped to the door, listened. Footsteps, patrolling his room. He returned to the table, make use of the situation, dread it for what it's worth. He crashed shakily to the audio and called Fayette's number. Luckily, Fayette, and not her father, answered. Fayette, darling. The word came out huskily. It was hard to say. It sounded real.
Who?
Then her voice was uneven.
You called me darling. Are you sure you're in your right mind?
I mean it, dear. Did he? I couldn't forget last night. He was falling into the self-made trap of the dishonest, unable to tell his own truth from his own falsehood.
All right, she said unevenly. So you couldn't forget it. So what?
He spoke softly. Please. He had to see her in his room right away. It was urgent. Would she come now? A long silence. Yes, she would come. Nor she wouldn't tell her father. Positively. 5 minutes later, she slipped into the room. She barely opened the door. He took her instantly into his arms. When he figured he had kissed her enough, he let her drop limply into a chair. The circles under her eyes were worse. She looked miserable. He drew up a chair. Tenderly took her hands in his.
Look at me, Fayette. I'm going to make a confession that will shock you. I'm not Carruthers Straley. I'm Ralph Unterzoider.
She didn't look shocked. He pretended not to notice. He told her selected portions of the story.
I suspected you had the map. I examined Tertia Morganum in your apartment yesterday when you and your father were in the kitchen.
And you wanted me to examine it, so I'll be sure to hire you on Beecher and take you with me to Shatton. That was the reason you posed as explorers, so Titan settlers would give you a free ride to the vicinity of X.
I broke into your room last night, Fayette, and made a copy of the map.
You left it wide open for me, so I could put my Unterzoider brains to work deciphering it. And now that I've deciphered the map...
That shocked her.
You did? But Daddy figured out it was made roughly 50,000 years ago.
His heart fell to the bottom of his stomach. The Beaches hadn't got over that stumbling block either. He'd made a mistake in trying to pump her. He smiled feebly, but salvaged something out of it.
50,000 years, he said druggedly. Seems to be correct.
She was on her feet, laughing half hysterically.
You're trying to say the Unterzoid has invented a time machine, that they aren't hibernating at all, after all the trouble we've gone to?
She giggled.
That's rich, Ralph.
Female instability. He held her tightly. A lie. A good solid lie. His heart raced. Bigger bales.
Of course not, dear. The whole idea of a time machine is fantasy.
Is it?
And it'll make you feel better to know the map is purely contemporary. You noticed the ship changed course. Well, dear, we are headed toward X.
She pushed away, her eyes amazed.
And, he added happily, you will also be glad to know that you and I and your father are going to collect the reward for finding the Hibernaculum.
Really, Ralph? That was your intention all along? You weren't going to free them? I was hoping so hard you were going only after the reward.
She switched her glance over his shoulder. Pity wrenched her face. Something hit Ralph Unterzoider hard on the back of the head. He fell straight down 10,000 miles and lay there for quite a while, studying patterns of light that squirmed in his head. Captain Folshag was dragging him to a chair. His tufted eyebrows came close. He put a slopping cloth in Unterzoider's forehead. He said,
"For the time, you're a prisoner in this cabin. I trust the experience would teach you some truths. Wickedness secretes various poisons in the body, particularly the heart and the liver. Change your ways, and you may indeed live a long life."
The door burst open, and Beecher lunged in. His shrewd eyes rested on Unterzoider.
"Sorry I had to bob you, Unterzoider," he said in clipped accents, "but it was the best way to get you out of the picture. Keep you from talking to bigger bales. He might have messed up the works. As it was, we told him the truth."
"The truth?"
"Certainly. You admitted it to Fayette. He had figured out the orbit and present position of X. He got the course from Folshag and made his turn around toward Titan again. Then he took off for X. So we whipped. But at least he kept us from being looted."
Undazoida ripped the wet cloth from his head and threw it somewhere. He laughed. He weaved about the room, holding his head and hooting while Foshag and Beecher looked on with open mouths. Then Foshag forced him into a chair.
Out of his head! Mr. Undazoida, please be quiet. That's better. There. Now we're going to leave you here for your own protection, Mr. Undazoida. The settlers are somewhat provoked. Do you agree?
Undazoida grinned widely up at him.
I am sick, he groaned. Tell Fayette I need her.
There's still eggs to find. An idea had come to him. He was in bed, the white cloth on his forehead, when Fayette walked in. She looked at him without sympathy. Tentatively she sat on the bed, curling one knee under another.
I'm sorry if you think I played Delilah, Ralph, she began.
He patted her knee delicately.
There, he soothed. None of that matters. Actually, we're two of a kind. That we're naturally treacherous, but we are indirect, the most dangerous weapon in the world. I wanted to discuss our plans. You see, marriage is a...
She gripped his wrist hard to make him stop talking. She said through her teeth,
After this... Nothing but the truth.
Inwardly, he groaned. She went on with determination.
I do love you. I do want to marry you and settle on Titan. The important thing is, do you love me and really want to marry me? Are you going to be honest with me about things that concern only us? Of course, I don't mind if you're tricky with other people. That's life.
Well, why not? Unfortunately, he would be unable to use her anymore for purposes of finding X, but apparently he was in love with her. He held her warm hands.
We'll get married and live on Titan, he said.
She leaned over and kissed him until he thought to be forced down through the bed. He added, But first I've got to get back in the good graces of the settlers. When she smiled incredulously, he said with confidence, It should be easy. And besides, it was necessary. As soon as Fayette left, he leaped out of bed and grabbed an encyclopedia out of the bookcase. He looked up Undazoida, tracing down until he found the expected paragraph. The fabulous cartels of the Undazoiders were built up through their amazing instinct on the stock market. When the market was bullish, they seemed to know when the crest was reached. Selling short in heavy amount at this point, they reaped millions in profit as the market fell, then caught the market again on the upswing. Invariably, the bulls were caught short by the Undazoider bears. The Undazoiders seemed to draw some special inspiration from one famous interpretation of their name, i.e. Undersiders, those who work from the underside. Undazoider sent the book scurrying into a corner. His hunch had been right, but now was not the time to work out the rest of the puzzle. He dressed quickly. Then he walked into the dining room, where dinner was in progress. He was wearing the white bandage pinned around his forehead. He was also limping very slightly. Sympathy was nonetheless lacking. Complete quiet reigned in the dining room. The settlers kept their faces turned away or looked fixedly at their plates. Fayette's expression alone showed sympathy. He knew his own face was fiery red. Nonetheless, he told the settlers everything he thought necessary. They knew it anyway. He apologized. He pointed out deviously that, after all, they were on the way to a new world. That much he had done for them.
What you do not realize is that it was I, your leader, who diverted Big Bells from looting the ship. Quite deliberately, I built up the feeling that the new cost was the cost to X, the hibernaculum of my criminal ancestors. All of you were convinced. Therefore, Bales became convinced. Had he known the Untazoida map was a fake, he would have taken it out on you by looting the ship. I sent him off on a wild goose chase.
Some of the settlers were looking at him with cautious interest. Beecher rose at this point.
I can say something in favour of Mr. Undazoider, he said. His intentions were good. Mr. Undazoider was only after the reward money. He did not intend to free the Undazoiders, even though he is an Undazoider himself. And half the reward money was to go into the treasury of Titan settlers.
Undazoider looked pop-eyed at Beecher. But now the settlers were frankly staring at him. After a moment, they began eating again. In several minutes more, the hall was full of chatter. Again. After the most uncomfortable meal of his life, Undazoida headed for the door. Beecher caught up with him, grinning companionably.
"We did a good job, mister," he said. "I had my own reasons for backing you up. This thing will blow over. Then I've got some ideas. You and I are sharpies and Zoider. We could set up in business on Titan and build up one of the biggest fortunes in the system, eventually. What do you say?"
And Zoider smiled wanly and said he would think it over. Then he went to his cabin. In 2 hours he had plotted Ecky's location to the dot. Then he leaned back, nibbling nervously at the pencil eraser. In 5 days, with good fortune, the infamous Unterzoiders would be awake and free. It took him 2 days of cautious footwork before the settlers completely dropped their hostility toward him. Then one evening he told them simply that they still had bigger bales to worry about.
"When he discovers he's been fooled, it's possible he might head for Titan and try to loot the settlement. We have to be ready. For several weeks we have to be on guard. The spaceship will be camouflaged. For a while we'll suspend building operations. We'll be ready for offense and defense. We have 3 lifeboats which are maneuverable in empty space or in an atmosphere. These lifeboats must be equipped with food, with water, with weapons. I'm calling for volunteers to help me with that job."
It was a rude shock to Unterzoider when Fiat became the first volunteer. By the 4th day, the lifeboats were deadly, offensive craft. Unterzoider paid particular attention to one of the lifeboats himself. Quite accidentally, it became loaded down with extra weapons and supplies. Only one thing bothered him. Fiat was underfoot all the time. As the time of leaving approached, his nerves began to get the better of him. The time, however, did come. At 22:04 on the 5th day, in the middle of the sleeping period, he dialed open the airlock door to the blister in which the stout little lifeboat nestled. He closed it behind him, turned around. Fiat was standing at the hatch of the little ship, slickly dressed in shiny boots, smart beige jodhpurs, and a blouse, open at the throat. She was holding her pet neutron gun with a snout pointed toward him. She was smiling confidently.
"Ralph," she said, "in my hand I hold a weapon. It is not indirect. It is not subtle. It does not practice deceit. It does not give half answers. It says yes, and it says no. That's all it says. It also gets yes and no answers. But don't be afraid of me, Ralph. I'm here to help you."
He found his voice. "Help me? I need no help. I work alone."
"Nobody works alone, Ralph. Ask Captain Foshag. Most people run on compulsive commands given them by people who might even be dead. Parents, mostly. Positive suggestion. The mind works that way. Sometimes people are made to feel they're unhealthy, only they aren't really. Or they're told their eyes are bad, or that they're superior to other people. It's just as if..."
She frowned hard, as if looking for an example.
"As if your parents were sitting inside that smart blonde head of yours, Ralph, and telling you to free the Unterzoiders from their sleep. It's something you feel you have to do. But you don't have to, Ralph. I'm here to help you."
He stared at her, stunned. He drew himself up arrogantly.
"Put down that gun, Fiat!"
If anything, she held the gun more firmly and moved it 3 inches toward him.
"Don't mistake me, Ralph,"
she said, her eyes cold.
"This is a yes and no game, no maybes or ifs. If you say yes when the gun says no, that's too bad. If you say no when the gun wants yes, that's too bad. You see how straightforward the 3 of us are. But I and my pet neutron gun will give you time to think. Tell me how you found X."
He slumped weakly against the bulkhead, wiping at his forehead with the back of a shaking hand.
"There were enough clues," he said hoarsely.
And there had been, at that. Tertium Organum, a key to the enigmas of the world, was a key. Its author, Ospensky, looked at the universe from a different viewpoint. The small u in Unterzoider meant that it was to be taken as a common noun. And certainly the conclusion that the map was made 50,000 years ago was itself an obvious clue.
"We made our calculations on the assumption that the map had been made looking at the solar system from the north, from the star Polaris, that is. It hadn't been. My ancestors drew the map from the unorthodox reference point of the Southern Cross. From the underside, I turned the negative upside down and made a new map. Then I got right answers."
"Very good," said Fayette. "The tricky Unterzoiders did live up to their name,
didn't they, Ralph?
Yes,
he said shakily. The gun wavered. Fayette was blinking.
Ralph, do you love me?
Yes.
Are you being truthful? Will you always tell me the truth? The whole truth?
Yes.
That's a good boy.
Please keep on giving my pet the right answers. Ralph, don't you know that if you freed the Undersiders, I couldn't ever look at you again?
There were angry tears in her eyes. Unterzoider suddenly remembered the time at the dance when he had wiped away her tears. He should wipe them away now. He was weakening. He was an Unterzoider. He should be strong. That was his duty.
Fired,
he said hoarsely.
Stand back, her chin came up. Answer the question, yes or no.
Yes.
Do you want to marry me?
Yes, Fired.
Her mouth opened and closed. Suddenly her shoulders heaved and she shook her head blindly. The gun dropped to her side.
Oh, Ralph, I can't do it. I was going to ask you if you still wanted to go ahead with it. But I can't. I can't force you. You'll have to make up your own mind.
She turned away, hiding her face with one arm. Instantly he leaped for her, tearing the gun from her hand. He looked at where it lay black and ugly in his hands. He was seeing it very well, with his excellent Unterzoider eyes. It slipped from his hand and fell to the floor. He let it lie and took Fayette into his arms.